Ekatra Foundation presents the Ekatra Dialogue, an exploration of the world's greatest thinkers and ideas. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Okay, let's unpack this. We're diving into a life so, well, epic, really. Mm-hmm. So filled with excess, legend. It's honestly kind of a miracle it was ever written down.
It really is.
I mean, how does someone navigate decades of rock and roll, these intense legal battles, serious health scares, and still come out not just alive, but still creating, still pushing music forward?
Yeah, thriving force. It's remarkable.
So today we're peeling back the layers on the legendary Keith Richards, co-principal songwriter, the unmistakable lead guitarist of the Rolling Stones, and, you know, a true cultural icon.
Absolutely.
And our source for this deep dive is his astonishingly raw, completely unvarnished autobiography, simply titled Life. He co-authored it with James Fox, came out in 2010.
A massive book, and rightly so.
Definitely. So our mission today is to dig out the most important nuggets of wisdom, the key insights from this incredible book. We want to help you understand not just what happened, but really how he navigated it all and why his story is still so significant, so relevant to us today.
And what's truly striking about Life, I think, is that it isn't just another celebrity memoir, you know?
Right. It feels different.
It really does. It's more like, well, a genre-defining work, maybe. It offers this direct first-person account straight from what you could call the eye of the hurricane he lived in. Richards puts you right there.
Yeah.
And the central thread, the thing weaving through the whole book, is this deep exploration of survival, of radical authenticity, and maybe most crucially, the almost transcendent power of music itself.
That comes through so strongly.
For him, life and music are completely inseparable. It's almost like the sacred code, a guiding force that gave his, let's face it, often chaotic existence a real sense of meaning, a structure, and ultimately, you could say, a kind of salvation. It really makes you think about the power of having a true calling.
That idea, music as a sacred code, it really hits home reading it. And to really get how that code formed, we need to go back, way back.
The very beginning, Dartford.
Exactly. Keith Richards' story starts in post-war Dartford, Kent. Born in 1943, working-class family, rationing, bomb sites. I mean, it paints such a vivid picture of that austere rebuilding Britain.
A very specific time and place.
But amidst all that, the book highlights this crucial figure, his grandfather. Augustus Theodore, Gus Dupree.
Gus, yeah. The musician in the family.
A multi-instrumentalist who saw something, you know, restless and musical in young Keith. He gave him his first guitar.
A pivotal moment.
And Richards admits his school years were, well, largely disinterested.
Yeah.
Marked by this sort of instinctive rebellion against authority.
Seems about right.
But his world really cracked open when he started hearing American rock and roll filtering through the airwaves, especially on the BBC. He talks about hearing Elvis Presley's Heartbreak Hotel.
Ah, the lightning bolt moment.
Yeah, he calls it nothing short of a revelation. Suddenly, music wasn't just background noise. It was a way of life, yeah. A possibility.
And it's fascinating how those early influences kind of clashed but also combined, right? You have this austere, buttoned-up post-war England.
Right.
And then this raw, visceral, almost dangerous energy coming from American blues and rock and roll. It really nurtured something deep in him.
And instinctive individualism.
Exactly. It defined his whole career, really. And he talks about his musical education, but it wasn't formal lessons. It was this self-directed, incredibly rigorous process.
The record player thing.
Yeah. Spending hours, literally hours, slowing down records to half speed, painstakingly decoding Chuck Berry, Muddy Waters, figuring out exactly what they were doing.
That takes serious dedication.
It's obsessive dedication to the craft. He was building this internal library, chord by chord, riff by riff, long before he ever really played out seriously. That deep dive into the fundamentals, it set the stage for everything else.
That image, him hunched over the turntable, it really sticks with you. And that intense focus led to maybe the most significant moment of his youth, a story that feels almost, well, faded.
The train station.
October 17th, 1961, Dartford Station. The book details him, guitar case, bag full of blues records, spots Mick Jagger, a childhood acquaintance.
I carry his own records. Chuck Berry, Muddy Waters.
And they bonded instantly over those records. This shared, almost revolutionary vision. Two young guys obsessed, determined to inject this raw, dangerous sexual energy into music for their generation.
And deliberately setting themselves apart.
Yeah, positioning themselves as the dangerous alternative to the Beatles.
Which they certainly were.
And then, of course, there's that story, the legendary moment of creation. Richards talks about the riff for I Can't Get No Satisfaction.
In his sleep.
Literally coming to him in his sleep. He managed to capture it, half awake, on a bedside tape recorder. Mostly acoustic guitar and snoring, apparently.
It's just the quintessential rock and roll myth, isn't it? Except it actually happened.
It absolutely is. But it does raise that question. How did this creative partnership, which everyone knows was often incredibly difficult, how did it last so long?
Yeah, the Jagger-Richards dynamic. The book really lays bare what you could call productive friction.
Productive friction, I like that.
Their strengths were different, right?
Yeah.
Keith bringing that raw musical foundation, those iconic riffs. Mick focusing more on lyrics, melody, the whole presentation.
The front man versus the engine room, kind of.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah.
And they didn't just coexist. That tension actually fueled their success, pushed them both. And speaking of that musical foundation, Keith goes deep into what he calls the ancient art of weaving.
His guitar style.
His unique rhythm guitar style. It's all about groove open tunings.
Cool.
Like his famous five-string open G.
Right, taking off the bottom string.
Exactly. Removing the low E, tuning the rest GDGBD. It let him create these rich, droning, resonant chords with fewer fingers, freeing him up for rhythmic interplay, that distinctive, almost orchestral sound the Stones have.
And that wasn't just accidental?
Not at all. It came from that obsessive mastery we talked about, understanding the guitar not just for solos, but primarily as a rhythmic engine. It's fundamental to his sound.
Okay, this is where, for me, it gets really interesting. Because beneath the rock star persona, the wild stories, Richards operates from this deceptively simple philosophy.
Authenticity.
Love all else. He's constantly talking about keeping it real, staying true to the blues, the roots music that first grabbed him, no matter what trends were happening.
And resisting the pressures.
Totally. His whole worldview feels very romantic, maybe.
Yeah.
Individualistic, certainly. Seeing life as these moments you have to fully experience, choosing autonomy over just playing it safe.
Embracing the whole thing, good and bad.
And what stands out, I think, is that this isn't just some rock star pose. Mm-hmm. It feels like a genuine core belief. Prioritizing your own authentic expression, even with all the risks involved,
Yeah. It
defined his whole life.
That's a really powerful takeaway. And what's fascinating is how deeply tied that philosophy is to his core motivation, this almost spiritual connection to the music itself.
Yeah, he talks about it like a calling.
Exactly. Like it chose him, not the other way around. And that perspective really shaped his whole approach to adversity, to all the chaos.
He didn't exactly shy away from trouble.
No. In many ways, he seemed to court it, but he saw obstacles not just as problems, but maybe as opportunities. He seemed to pragmatically accept the cost of his choices.
The drug bust, the health scare.
All of it. Because his resilience was so anchored in that artistic mission, that absolute belief in the music, it's a pretty remarkable lesson in knowing your why so clearly that it helps you survive almost anyhow.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But of course, even the strongest beliefs get tested, right? Often by these huge life-altering events. And Keith's life had more than its share.
Definitely some major turning points.
Let's look at three pivotal ones the book highlights, the ones that really shaped the legend. First up, the Redlands drug bust, 1967.
Redlands, infamous.
The book details the police raid on his country estate, Redlands, in West Sussex. What's compelling is how he describes the absolute media frenzy. And meticulously debunks that whole mythical Mars bar story.
Right, which became this weird piece of rock folklore. But for Richards, Redlands wasn't just a legal mess. It was a defining moment.
How so?
Well, it transformed him. He went from being just another rebellious rock star to something more like a counterculture martyr. It absolutely solidified that outlaw reputation.
And the Stones became symbols.
Exactly. Symbols of this generational conflict directly challenging the establishment. It was a huge cultural moment crystallized in his personal ordeal.
Okay, then fast forward a decade. The Toronto drug bust, 1977. He calls this his absolute nadir, his lowest point.
Rock bottom, yeah. Facing serious time.
Potential life imprisonment for heroin possession in Canada. He describes it as this stark realization that the lifestyle he'd been living just wasn't sustainable anymore. Something had to break.
And Toronto really was that brutal wake-up call. It forced him to confront the addiction head-on, led to what he calls the arduous process of getting clean.
Was that purely survival?
Partly, maybe. But he makes it clear it was significantly motivated by his new relationship with Patty Hansen. And fundamentally, it was about reclaiming his identity primarily as a musician, not just as Keith Richards, the junkie. It shows how crisis if you meet it right, with purpose and support, can actually fuel profound change.
Okay, and the third one is different, but just as important in its own way. The Chuck Berry tour revelation.
Right, meeting your hero.
And finding out maybe you shouldn't meet your heroes. He recounts this really disillusioning experience touring with Chuck Berry, his ultimate idol. The paranoia, Berry's erratic behavior, the money demands, just walking off stage.
It must have been crushing for someone who revered him so much.
Totally. But what's striking is the human lesson he says he took from it.
Which
basically, that musical genius doesn't automatically equal personal grace or professionalism. It helped him get a more realistic, less idealized view of his heroes, and maybe of himself too.
Separating the art from the artist.
Exactly. A crucial moment of maturity, maybe. Distinguishing the icon from the complex, flawed human being. That's a lesson many of us learned somewhere along the way, I suppose.
For sure. In different contexts, but yeah.
So beyond the big dramas, the turning points, the book makes it really clear that relationships were his anchors. They provided different kinds of structure within all that chaos.
Absolutely essential.
The most important, and definitely the most complicated, was the Glimmer Twins' partnership with Mick Jagger, their songwriting and production alias.
Right.
They created some of the most iconic music ever, despite what Richards very candidly describes as periods of intense conflict and mutual resentment.
A notoriously volatile relationship.
But then you contrast that with Charlie Watts, the stoic, unflappable drummer. Richards often calls him the band's emotional and rhythmic heart.
The steady center.
Yeah, Watts' presence seems like this silent counterpoint to all the madness, a quiet, consistent anchor.
And what's really compelling is seeing how these different relationships, the volatile ones, the stable ones, provided different kinds of chemistry, different forms of structure within the chaos. Both were essential for his creativity and, honestly, probably his survival.
How so?
Well, that productive friction with Jagger, that constant creative tension, it pushed them. But it was balanced by the absolute stability and grounded musicality of Watts. That combo allowed the band to navigate decades of fame, internal fights, huge personal turmoil, without completely falling apart.
Makes sense. And then the romantic relationships.
Crucial, too. Anita Pallenberg, a major figure, not just a partner, but a creative force herself, a muse, a collaborator. Their relationship was incredibly passionate, creative, but also marked by destructive excess.
The complicated legacy there.
Definitely. And then Patty Hansen, his wife since 83. She represents this profound shift towards stability, renewal. She was instrumental in helping him battle addiction, finding a different way to live, a perspective beyond just the music and the rebellion. Each person played a really specific, vital role.
So wrapping this all up, what does this incredible life story mean for you, the listener, today? Richard's struggles, his triumphs, they offer these really universal human lessons, don't they? Far beyond just rock and roll.
Absolutely.
First, there's authenticity over acceptance. His choice to be unapologetically himself, even when it cost him dearly. It's a powerful lesson, especially now in our age of curated online identities. Stay true to yourself.
Even when it's hard. Maybe especially when it's hard.
Then the power of persistence. His whole career just screams longevity. And it wasn't easy. It required this extraordinary persistence through countless challenges, all rooted in that deep, unwavering commitment to the music.
Finding your purpose and sticking with it.
And finally, maybe one of the most powerful messages, recovery is always possible. His successful, incredibly hard-fought battle with heroin addiction, kicking it in his 40s, and then continuing to grow to create well into his later years.
Yeah.
It just shows that positive change, real reinvention, it can happen at any stage of life.
Yep.
And you don't have to abandon who you fundamentally are to do it.
Exactly. And those lessons are so tied to his core purpose. Richard's journey really illustrates that resilience is rooted in purpose. His why, the music, that sacred code, was ultimately strong enough to help him overcome the how, all the chaos, the self-destruction, the pressure.
And his human legacy.
It's remarkable, isn't it? He went from this ultimate rock and roll outlaw figure to becoming a kind of elder statesman, embracing wisdom, showing that creative longevity is possible, even fulfilling. His story offers so much for anyone navigating their own challenges, creative or personal, or just trying to live an authentic life in a pretty demanding world.
This deep dive into Keith Richards' life has really felt like a journey through the heart of rock and roll itself. We've seen him as the architect of that iconic Stones sound. A cultural icon, sure, but also just a testament to the sheer transformative power of music.
Yeah.
And the book itself. That candid, unfiltered voice, the mix of honesty, deep musical insight, and just raw human story. It makes it essential reading, I think. It goes way beyond the headlines.
Definitely. And maybe a final thought as you reflect on Keith's incredible life. Life reminds us that our own stories are still being written, you know? Richard's kept growing, kept creating, well into his 70s. He proved it's never too late to surprise yourself or to redefine who you are. His example kind of encourages you maybe to see your own life not as some fixed thing, but as this ongoing creative project, always open to revision, always capable of new chapters, and always worthy of your attention and care.
Join us next time for a new episode featuring another world-renowned individual, a new book, and a new idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.